Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News, this is Lead of News.
High atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Mr. Eric D. Snyder in for Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A Eugene man is charged with murder after a body is found. Defense Secretary Robert Gates makes a surprise visit to Afghanistan. And a Tempe, Arizona restaurant is serving reindeer this holiday season.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this. Is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, December 8th, 2010. I'm Eric D. Snyder.
Way to make that your own right out of the gate. Well done.
Eric D. Snyder in for Don Taylor. Here are some news things. As Defense Secretary Robert Gates makes a surprise visit to Afghanistan, there are more reports of progress there. Major General Richard Mills says there is still too much violence in Afghanistan, but the security situation is improving. He says...
I'm sorry, you're just, this is one of the things. You're going to go to me right out of the gate with some sound. I'm not going to be ready, and it's going to be a colossal failure. Wait, no. Wait.
He says troops have experienced a shift in enemy tactics.
They fight with nearly a total reliance on implanting IEDs and simple shoot and scoot direct fire incidents. We see this vice his prior tactic of facing us in unit size engagements.
Okay, I got like five things to say about this. One, no. Three, when he says he, is this like a Charlie, Jerry, Zach thing where we got to, have we come up with a name for the Afghani?
I don't think we have.
It's not like, I mean, have we, you know, is it Phil or Ted or Habib or something?
It should be. Yeah, we should come up with something.
All right, did he say that we are in fact being, I'm not saying we're being beaten, but it seems like we haven't really won or we'd be gone. Are we, in fact, being at least matched or perhaps in some cases bested by something called a shoot-and-scoot technique?
Evidently, the shoot-and-scoot is a powerful, powerful war strategy.
I think it's also a ride at Dolly World. So, all right. Let's just play that one more
time.
Today,
they fight with nearly a total reliance on implanting IEDs and simple shoot-and-scoot direct fire incidents.
That's just shameful. That's really what it is. There's no way to conduct a war.
Because you know the terrorists don't have goofy names like that for what they're doing.
No, they got the Kilotron 5000 and the Death-O-Matic. And
right.
The
Shoot-and-Scoot.
Yeah, the Shoot-and-Scoot.
That's a country song.
The Shoot-and-Scoot just sounds like one of those things that like you would be dragged to a Disneyland when you're not quite old enough to go on any of the real rides. And so it's like one step above. It's one step above like the Autopia thing where your parents just stick you in a car. It's like some sort of a midway, you know, where you can where you can do a little bit of target practice for a prize that you can't possibly really want.
The shoot and scoot.
All right. And also, I think an implanted IED is like, I think that's one of those things that the judges always give poor chicks so they won't continue to pump out kids.
I believe you're right. Well, if that's what's working in Afghanistan, who are we to judge?
Seriously. Well, it's like we're basically just, I mean, I remember just seeing the initial footage from when we went into Afghanistan in like, I don't know, however long ago it was.
1978.
I realized the other day that the war had been going on for like the better part of a decade at this point. So.
It's now longer than the Soviets were in Afghanistan.
Is that true?
We just passed that like a few days ago, past that mark.
I think you meant longer than Ivan was in Afghanistan. What the hell was I saying? But I remember we first went through Afghanistan. I was just, Tim Riley and I, who was the news director for the show at the time, we were just sitting there. We would watch the news on CNN. And it was like beneath the Planet of the Apes. I mean, it was like these guys with essentially like pointed sticks riding ponies out of the hills.
Right.
And of course, I, like every other American, another way, well, this would be a cakewalk. And then, you know, years
Apparently not. Apparently, what was really hard for the Soviets is really hard for other people, too.
See, and, you know, this is the thing that you, because on the one hand, it's like that American jingoism of the, well, yeah, but that was the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, they were bankrupt and teetering on the brink of collapse, and they're all drunk, and, you know, nothing ever opens properly because some guy drank all the hydraulic fluid the night before.
Right.
You know, but on the other hand, you got to hand it to the Soviets. The Soviets, like the Israelis, you know what they're really good at is killing people. I mean, really, if you need someone removed, I mean, with extreme prejudice from
That's true.
Face of the earth, the Soviets, they can get that job done. I mean, traditionally speaking. You know, it's really the Soviets, the Israelis, and the Catholic Church. I mean, they can expunge every last trace of you. And the fact that the Soviets couldn't get it done, that maybe should have been a little bit of a tip-off to us.
You'd think, but, yeah. We'll learn eventually.
Shoot and
scoot. Shoot and scoot.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us on this Wednesday.
That's right.
Wednesday, December 8th, 2010. Eric D. Snyder sitting in for Don Taylor today, who is, as I noted in my Twitter update this morning, who is alternately caring for and mocking the pain of her husband, Patrick, who I believe just had something unpleasant inserted into a delicate area of his body.
Oh, well, good for him.
And Don, being Don, of course, immediately noted that a certain certain manner of physical pleasure was probably off the agenda for the next for the next few weeks, at least.
Yeah, we need to root for Patrick because he is the most adept person on the face of the earth at putting up with Don Taylor.
That's the thing, is he really is the
remarkable skill.
He's the balancing agent. He's here's what Patrick is in my experience, and I don't pretend to know Don, you know, that intimately or that well. I've known her for a few years now, but probably not as well as you know her. But it's sort of like it's like when they talk about cocaine in its natural state. And a lot of stories, by the way, are metaphors involving Don. Cocaine will enter into that equation at some point.
Obviously.
But they talk about the coca leaf. And, you know, if you just chew on a coca leaf, it gives you a buzz, kind of like a cup of coffee, but it can get you all cranked up or whatever. And that's because there is the alkaloid that gives you the kick, but then there's a balancing agent, and so it all ends up being a bit of a wash.
Right.
Patrick is that balancing agent.
Absolutely. That's a perfect analogy.
So there you go.
So, yes, best wishes to Patrick. And Don said she's going to be listening from our laptop. So.
And we're going to speak with her next hour, about an hour from now at the beginning of the Rick Emerson show. We're going to give her a call because I think she's just staring blankly at a wall somewhere, like at the hospital.
It's not like she's involved in the medical procedures.
No.
She's not needed there in the room.
No. That's like a line of succession. You have to get through the head of the agriculture department before you would possibly call Don for that. Coming up later this hour, you got your entertainment news, also science on the march. If you want to get this program via iTunes later on the day, you can do that. At iTunes, you can get it as a direct download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com as well, and on your mobile device, that is mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Eric D. Snyder.
A Eugene, Oregon man has been charged with murder after the body of the woman who shared a house with him was found in the backyard. The Register Guard, which evidently is a news publication of some kind, reports that 24-year-old Miguel Angel Chavez was arrested after the body of 55-year-old Deborah Ann Stone was found in a shallow grave in the backyard of her Eugene home. Eugene police say the relationship between Chavez and Stone was unclear. No details about the death were released. Police were called to Stone's home on Monday after a family member reported her missing. Investigators discovered her body several hours later.
Doesn't this seem like, really, most of these stories are undone by the shallow part of the shallow grave?
I mean,
dig a deeper grave, friend.
It says they discovered her body several hours later, so it really didn't take much effort.
No.
They showed up at her house. She wasn't there. They found her in the backyard.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem like that requires, I mean, I'm not saying it's not top-flight police work and all, but I mean, that's just, you know, that may have come into play, but it doesn't sound like it was really needed.
Well, and it seems like for the first few hours, anyway, they didn't even know she was dead. Just, oh, she's not here. She's missing. And then they figured out, oh,
also,
she's dead.
Also, there's a new petunia bed out there.
Right, yeah. And the guy was 24 and she was 55, and the nature of their relationship was unclear.
Was it a, what is it? Was it a May September romance or
something?
What does you call that? You call it a May September romance?
Yeah, or a, she may have been a cougar. She may have been a sugar mama.
There's that. Okay.
We can make up all kinds of scandal for this story.
Let's do that. In the absence of hard fact, let's just create wild conjecture and speculation totally without basis.
Absolutely. So there you go, Eugene, man.
If you're going to bury somebody, you know, maybe just doing it like somewhere where the squirrels aren't going to find her like 30 seconds later. That might be your first step there, friend. You know, so next time around, just, you know, word of the wise.
Absolutely.
Here's Eric D. Snyder.
You know, the last time the Senate took up an impeachment case, remember those days?
Yes. No.
1999, when it acquitted President Bill Clinton of two articles of impeachment. Well, Happy days are here again. Today, the U.S. Senate will begin deciding on four articles of impeachment against federal judge G. Thomas Porteous Jr.
Really?
Of Louisiana.
Is he... Is the trial being conducted on the deck of the pinafore, or...?
I'm picturing men in their white suits and the little bow ties, their thumbs under the lapels. My client, this is a travesty.
And I know that that's like a Clarence Darrow thing you're doing there, but I always go to the hyper interstellar chicken from Futurama, who I think is modeled on Clarence Darrow.
Yes, mopping his forehead with his handkerchief. The judge's attorney, Jonathan Turley, said why this case needs to be carefully weighed.
Once the Senate allows the House to cross this constitutional Rubicon.
Really?
For the first time, Congress would be able to dredge up any pre-federal conduct to strip the bench of unpopular judges.
Well, first of all, this is the first impeachment since 1999, and it's somebody I've never even heard of, which makes it automatically less interesting to
me. Because, judge.
Yeah, and I mean, I like it. What is it, Porteous?
Porteous, yeah.
Okay, I like that. Also, by the way, points for correct use of the word Rubicon. Well done.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's a thing that has been Googled with increasing frequency and rapidity over the last, eight, nine months or whatever, however long that show's been on.
Probably so. That's probably where he picked it up. Turley says the case is weak.
In this case, the Justice Department did not find evidence to bring a single charge of criminal wrongdoing.
Do we even know what the guy's accused of? I don't.
I only know because I heard people discussing it at the gym yesterday.
And so what was the nature of his alleged offense?
Taking money from people, taking bribes and stuff.
Honestly, who hasn't?
Well, and honestly, a corrupt judge in Louisiana.
I mean, what are the odds?
Seriously. I'm a little disappointed by that attorney's accent.
Yeah, I'm sure
though.
The bookies took a bath on that one.
Yeah. Anyway.
I would just be taking, I'd be taking money left of it. Nobody's really offering it to me. That's the only reason I haven't engaged in some sort of rampant graft or corruption already.
Probably true of most people, because no one's offered.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like you just Rick Emerson can be bought, and for less than you might imagine. I mean, really, I'm an affordable bit of vice for you. So
make him an offer.
Yeah, I hope that he's acquitted, not because I know anything about his guilt or innocence, or because I'm in favor of corruption in the judicial system. I just like his name, and I like the particular panache with which this story seems to be. Let me just say this real quickly about that. That one of the very few things that how do I put this? One of the very few events about which I was not able to opine, to my great regret, is the Clinton impeachment, because I think I was off the air at that time. Because he got, it was in 98.
99 is when the procedure was, but 98 was when all the scandal was happening.
That was the whole, I did not have relations with that woman while wearing the tie she gave him, which is like, look at how big my sack is. That's what that is. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't. I was just sitting in my house in San Diego, just being like a philosophical, depressed guy without a job. Not even talking to not even have a dog. Just talking to no one.
Talking into a wooden kitchen spoon.
Exactly. My friends, I have only one thing to say about this. I am speaking to you now into a ladle. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Here is Mr. Eric D. Snyder.
A Macy's Santa Claus has been fired over a joke. Man who's been portraying Santa Claus at Macy's in San Francisco's Union Square for over two decades was out of a job Tuesday night after a couple took offense to a risque joke he said he's been telling for years. John Toomey has been known to a lot of local San Franciscans as Santa John, not just because of his many years playing the part at Macy's, but also because he looks and acts the part, complete with a jolly laugh. But this year, not everyone is smiling. That's because Toomey was fired by Macy's because of a complaint about a joke he told to an adult couple sat on his lap. You want to know the joke, right?
Okay, is this the Macy's in New York?
This is San Francisco.
Okay, yeah. So let me just tell you, let me ask you this. Have you ever seen the Macy's in San Francisco when it is decorated for Christmas?
I have not.
It's fantastic.
Yeah?
I can tell you, I'm just a huge Christmas nerd, as I think I mentioned yesterday. I love Christmas. And I love all the things about Christmas that are just things that other people would find corny or trashy or trite or gaudy or whatever. Like, doesn't bring it all on. I don't care. The cardboard advent calendars with terrible chocolate inside. Huge, gaudy, blinking decorations, the little MIDI toys that just do Good King Wenceslas, I love it all. The Macy's in San Francisco, if it's the one I'm thinking of, is a huge building, and it looks very Orwellian. It's like one of those sort of atomic age, one of those mid-century modern buildings.
Right, right.
Where it's just a massive stone edifice, or a word like that, but it's just got all of these windows, and it's sort of equidistant. It's very sort of You know, it's very very sort of Soviet looking.
Sure.
But then in each window, they put this bright green neon wreath. I mean, it's not even like a real wreath. It's just like a neon sign meant to look like a wreath. And it's like where one of those would look bad, two of them would look tacky, three of them would look horrible, but like 500 of them all in one place, it looks fantastic. It really is just one of the finer things.
Well,
what is the joke he told? Do we know the actual nature of the joke?
We do indeed. What would the story be without the joke?
All right.
Santa John began. This is an adult couple sat on his lap. Which, first of all,
how do they both fit on his lap? Are they a tiny couple or is he got a big lap?
I don't know. And why are adults even anyway?
Is this a fetish of some kind?
Probably.
Okay.
So they sat on his lap, and he began as usual by asking them if they've been good. This is all Santa John reporting the story. And they
do you know what polyamory is?
And they said, "Oh yes, Santa." And I said, "Well, that's too bad." And then I said, "You know why Santa's so happy and jolly all the time?" And they said, "No." And I said, "That's because Santa knows where all the naughty boys and girls live."
Okay.
So
I shouldn't have laughed at that, probably.
And they didn't, this couple.
Look, you know, they can get bent. You're an adult couple sitting on Santa's lap. There's something weird about
exactly.
You anyway.
And John Toomey, the Santa, says he never jokes with children, of course.
Of course.
And only tells the jokes to adults, hoping to get a laugh. He says, "I've used it for over 20 years. No one has ever complained about it. And they didn't complain about it to me. They went up to management." Now he's out of a job.
The safe word is Cratchit.
That just seems like a joyless couple.
I know. Well, yeah. You're going to sit on Santa's lap, yet you have no sense of humor about anything, apparently.
Yeah, but I mean, and again, the whole... So I'm imagining like one was on each... Here's the thing. If it's a couple, and they're a married couple, and they're sitting on Santa's lap at the same time... And yet they are offended by what is a fairly tame joke in the annals of naughty jokes.
Right.
Then it seems like, here's the only conclusion I can come to, all of those pieces of evidence put together indicate that they are not sitting on Santa's lap because they're legitimately sort of fun-loving or into the holiday or even, you know, fun-lovingly perverse. They're just one of those cutesy suburban couples that were getting this taken so they could send it out with their family letter.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I have another possibility.
Hmm.
They thought he was actually Santa Claus, and they took this very seriously. To them, this was a religious pilgrimage.
They're just not terribly bright.
And he violated the sanctity of it.
That's right. He shattered their illusions. All right. Here's Mr. Eric D. Snyder, who is in for Don Taylor on this Wednesday.
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange remains behind bars in London after turning himself into British authorities in connection with a Swedish arrest warrant. Assange was denied bail and is fighting extradition back to Sweden on sexual assault charges. Assange's lawyer, Mark Stevens, says his client, wait for it, is innocent.
Many people will come forward to stand as sureties for Mr. Assange. Many people believe Mr. Assange to be innocent, myself included. And many people believe that this prosecution is politically motivated.
This can't possibly be a real person. I couldn't be that lucky. Hold on.
This is going to go viral. Many people will come forward to stand as sureties for Mr. Assange.
Sureties?
Many people believe Mr. Assange to be innocent, myself included. And many people believe that this prosecution is politically motivated.
I love this guy. I want to put him on retainer right now to represent me in whatever criminal trial I may face in the future.
Mark Stevens is his name. And yeah, he's got a good
voice. Bowtie?
I assume so.
Yeah.
And he probably got the powdered wig if he's in England.
Yeah, no, you're right. He has the voice going on. It's like a little flair.
Yeah, yeah. He says his client is innocent. Amazing that he thinks it may be politically motivated.
You know,
where does he get that idea from?
Everybody talks about, you know, it's not even just as fashionable. It's just a thing people do. It's like such a reflexive thing to hate lawyers.
Sure.
You know, like you got to hate politicians, you got to hate lawyers. And, you know, the thing is, everybody hates a lawyer until you need one.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly it's like you want this guy. All of the things that people traditionally claim that they dislike about lawyers, about like the especially flamboyant sort of like the Johnny Cochran types, all of those things that people claim to be irritated by, those are exactly the things that they look for as soon as they got to find a lawyer. Can I just,
It's interesting to watch the self-censorship process.
Well, you know, Courtney Hameister, because I think she does, I think it's on Wednesday, Thursdays, I think she sits in with Court and Bobby.
I think it's Wednesdays.
Is it Wednesday?
Byron Beck is Thursday.
No, that's right. It is Wednesday because David Walker made sure to note in what he might have assumed was a private conversation that he doesn't open for Courtney. She opens for him. There you go.
Nice.
But she and I were talking about something, and she's done Livewire Radio, and she's a performer, but this is sort of a different kind of radio for her. And I said, get used to a couple of things. I said, get used to having to tell your friends and loved ones, especially whoever it is that might share your bed, perhaps tell them don't listen, and then if they do, be prepared to be yelled at some point.
Right.
And also, be prepared for a lot of these moments where you sit and you weigh. Should I say this? I shouldn't say this. I should probably... But then you just do anyway, inevitably. I'll put it this way. I'll just say that I have, in a couple different areas of my life, I have, many projects that I'm working on, many irons in the fire, because I'm easily bored and whatnot. So I have a, not that I'm like some playa or something, a power broker, but I have a couple different attorneys who work for me on different things. And one of the attorneys, an attorney who represents one of the projects on which I work, I will say that this isn't the sole reason I hired him, but this is one of the reasons. It's that he also represents a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And the friend of mine was having some low-level amount of trouble with someone. It was just sort of a nuisance, sort of a harassing kind of a thing.
Sure.
And so this friend of mine was having a little bit of trouble. Went to the lawyer about it and was like, oh, this thing, I got this guy and the whole deal, what am I going to do? And so the lawyer, he just said, nothing's quite as effective as overreacting. Hold on. He immediately had five cops. And then some other guy that he just hired, all of them presumably armed. Just go and confront the person at their place of business and give them a sort of verbal what for, mm-hmm. right in front of everybody. And I think one of the guys was like a private detective who had like sort of a license to carry. And so the cops are talking to the guy. And then meanwhile, the other guys are standing in the background glaring and holding a gun, or whatever. And he's like, problem solved. Guy won't bother you anymore. And I was like, that's a lawyer that I want. That's who I want representing me.
Nice.
So I look forward to the day when I can call in that same service.
I may need to get his card from you.
Yes. Yeah, it's
awesome.
Here's Mr. I.T. Snyder. Oh, we have more. Do we have more Assange cuts there?
We do have a couple more if you want them.
Yes, why not?
Well, there's a legal analyst, Jeffrey Toobin, says this will be a tough case to prove.
One of the difficulties of this case had been that Assange has been essentially invisible. And now he is under the control of an allied legal system. And the question is, will the United States file charges against him?
By the way, I had this this idea last night when I was drifting off to sleep, and I was like, oh, I got to do this tomorrow morning. I was making a little mental note in my, my cerebral file of things to do. And then I got it this morning, and I've been beaten to it. I had this WikiLeaks joke that occurred to me. And I realize now that if you ever have a piece of humor or a joke or something you got to post it now.
You got to tweet it immediately.
Somebody will already have tweeted it by the time you wake up.
Believe me, I know.
Or by the time you get back from lunch.
Uh-huh.
Like, I have a great knock-knock joke that's never been, oh, dope! And then somebody has already posted it. So, my WikiLeaks thing was stolen from right underneath me. So, make your WikiLeaks jokes now, kids.
Well, what was the joke?
Nah, it's pointless. I don't even want it. I want to traffic in sadness.
All right. Whoever this Toobin legal analyst is. We just played that. Talks about the possibility of U.S. charges.
I think we have a...
Is there another one?
From him.
Will the United States file charges against him? Certainly the Attorney General has hinted that the United States will, but as far as we know, they haven't done so yet, so that legal process has not even begun.
Here's the thing. I'm just in an abstract sense. If we are a huge globe-spanning evil superpower, which I like to think we are,
sure.
If we are in fact just engaged in corruption and just horrible behavior all the time, I mean, I'm just asking a sort of a philosophical question: why do we need charges? I mean, if the WikiLeaks things are supposedly full of us just killing people by the bushel, then I mean, hell, what's one more on the fire, man?
Well, I suppose that would sort of prove the point, though, wouldn't it?
I guess, but I mean, we're going to stick him in a hole where he's going to be beaten with a truncheon, I would imagine, for most of the rest of his life.
I think we have to follow procedures. Follow the system.
Maybe that's, it's the system that's out of order, my friend. All right. Jeffrey Toobin, by the way, to bring it all back home, he, speaking of impeachment a while back, he's the author of a fantastic book. If you're into nonfiction or if you're into the system of political machinations, which runs our country, he wrote a book called A Vast Conspiracy, which is a sort of an attempt to be kind of the last summation, the final word on the Bill Clinton impeachment scandal.
Oh, right.
Everything from, from the Ken Starr angle to the Linda Tripp angle to the Monica Lewinsky angle to the Like, do you remember that whole thing? Like, when the Clinton-Lewinsky thing was going on, there was that whole deal where Larry Flint was offering, like, $5 jillion, like, if you could prove you'd F the Republican.
Yeah.
And it was like we had, like, three speakers of the House or something all resign in a row in the course of, like, an hour. Mm-hmm. It's a great book. It's called A Vast Conspiracy.
That's where I'd heard his name before.
By Jeffrey Toobin. Yeah, he's a great guy. You are listening to... he's a great guy. you're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Dawn Taylor at the hospital with her ailing husband, Patrick, today. So our thoughts go out to her. Mr. Eric D. Snyder is substituting for her on this Wednesday. Coming up later on, we got your entertainment news. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Let's see, today... So you will be here for a little bit of the intro, a little for the first chunk or so of the Rick Emerson Show. Later on today, Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler from Fun Employment Radio, who do their show in this the same studio with us. So Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler are going to be on today's show. Let's see. Also, our good friend Todd the Corpse Werkhoven, who is known to many of you as a longtime friend of the program. He's it's a long story. He was... it's actually not that long of a story. I met him years and years and years ago. I did this short film, and I was casting... one of the parts was for a dead body. It was needed an extra. And so he won a contest to be the corpse.
Nice.
And so he just became Todd the Corpse, like, forever. And so now I've known him for like 10 years now, but he's still Todd the Corpse. But if you just call him that, it weirds people out. So I have to add the last name there. He will be in the program later on today as well. He'll be in the Rick Emerson Show because, and this is a thing that maybe nobody else finds interesting, but I do, and that's really what matters, is that he's got a stand-up arcade game, a Ms. Pac-Man game, Ms. Pac-Man, that he's, I think he's been told that he has to get rid of it. He hasn't put it that way, but I think he's been told that he has to sell it.
Told by, like, his wife or something?
You said that. I didn't say that.
Gotcha.
I'm sure that she's a very tolerant woman.
Sure.
But anyway, so he, and I was like, well, you got to come on, and A, there's somebody in the audience probably who would buy it from
Absolutely.
You, and B, like, it's just an excuse to talk about Ms. Pac-Man and video games and whatever. Let's see, what else? There was something else that occurred to me. Wait. You, Sarah, Greg, Todd.
You're going to talk to Dawn? Is that going to happen?
Dawn Taylor's going to talk to us as well via the phone. That's right. Well done, Eric Snyder.
Thank you.
All right. And so forth. This program, Legion of News, is brought to you by one of our fine business partners, Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. That is how you can contact them, 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical contractors, supervisors, and maintainers of all power-carrying devices in your home. So we've talked about the fact that I think apparently Dawn just from time to time just fetches out pieces of toast by sticking a fork in the toaster without unplugging it.
That seems like a bad idea.
It does seem like a bad idea. Now, let's be clear about this. They're not going to be able to fix... Like, when you do that, and I'm just speaking to you now, Dante, when you do that and your synapses explode... That's going to be beyond the realm of what they—that's beyond their ken, I think. I don't know that that's going to be fixable. However, the people who get the house after you, once they have scrubbed away the rather peculiar scorch mark in the kitchen floor, they're going to want to make sure that things, you know, that you haven't backed up the system into the basement and just, you know, the fuses aren't out everywhere and that everything's sort of running properly. So they'll want to contact Squires Electric about that after you're passing at 503-252-1609. So whether you're moving into a new house or maybe you're in a house that's, you know, it's 50, 60 years old. There's a lot of houses like the John's Landing area, you know, and stuff. These houses that are built, you know, 1940 or whatever. And they got like one plug in each room because all you really ever needed was like a thing to agitate your clothing.
And it's all the old two-prong.
Totally, yeah. And then it's like, and then you're just a guy, you're just stringing together a bunch of 99-cent cables across the room so you can plug in like a printer or something. And that's no good. Because then it's like, do you ever do this? You ever just plug in something really small, just like a, you know, like a hair dryer or something. And then it's like, but then the cord is like hot to the touch.
Mm-hmm.
And you sit there and you look at it and you wonder like, A, when is that going to set the house on fire? And is it irradiating my insides? The answer to all these things is yes, by the way, unless you contact Squires Electric. There you go.
If you don't go to Squires Electric, you will die, is what you're saying.
That's I don't want to put it that way, but I guess since you've just come out with it, we might as well, confirm that that is the case.
Will lead to your death.
That's there have been studies. 503-252-1609, Squires Electric. Here is Mr. Eric Snyder.
A Tempe restaurant, Tempe, Arizona, is getting in the Christmas spirit by fashioning a multi-course tasting menu featuring reindeer. First, I saw they were serving reindeer, and I thought, well, normally reindeer can't come into the restaurant. We won't serve your kind here. No, that's not what they mean. They mean they're actually serving...
Side entrance, please.
Yeah. Not exactly Euro-Asian reindeer, but North American caribou.
Now, is it a caribou or is it a reindeer? What the hell is going on in
Apparently,
this story?
Apparently, a caribou is a reindeer. I believe that is the case. They're basically the same animal with different names, or like sort of different... Like a wolf and a coyote, I think.
No,
I don't know.
By the way, I'm making things up.
No.
See, here's the thing. You have no idea how perfectly you're fitting into the show right now because you don't know, so you're just saying something, but like sort of definitive, like confidently.
Right.
You're like, no, a wolf and a coyote and an elephant, they're all the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I mean, externally they look different. I mean, but that's just, an epidermal issue. It's all
the same DNA. Yeah,
exactly.
They're like cousins. Yeah.
All right, so but it's a caribou. So is a reindeer not an actual thing then? Is that like a colloquialism? Is that a, in other words, is that like a... It's the word I'm looking for. Is it like a catch-all designation that doesn't really exist, do you think?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's go with that.
There you go.
No, I believe that it's all the caribou family, and the reindeer is simply what they call it in those, like in Scandinavia and the North Pole.
The genius.
Okay. The Cafe Boa is the name of the restaurant. Their caribou comes from Colorado and Idaho, not the North Pole. The restaurant's menu begins, this sounds really good, with caribou tartare gilded with pickled quail egg. That's followed by caribou tongue bruschetta with pickled watermelon radish and horseradish cream.
I don't think this sounds good at all.
There's also caribou sausage.
Yeah, no,
here's
the thing. It sounds like a thing that they're serving. This sounds like the sort of the carnivorous plate-based equivalent to one of those Jones sodas things. That they're selling because it's sort of, it's a holiday-themed meal, which will horrify your children, by the way. And because they'd get some publicity, see this story.
Obviously.
But that, probably isn't very good, because you got to figure if it was good, they would be serving it year-round, right?
That's a good point. Maybe it's expensive. Maybe it's hard to, I don't know.
All right, well, then, I guess that's possible as well. It might be a thing that you have to sort of, like, import, or maybe it's some sort of quasi-endangered animal.
There's some pasta courses, caribou bolognese, caribou-filled tortellini in a parmesan broth. That sounds all right.
All right, you're winning me over.
Yeah. The same restaurant last Easter put together a special all-rabbit dinner.
Yeah,
so
no.
So I guess that's sort of their thing.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. By the way, Don has sent this message. Don, this is from Don Taylor to y'all, by the way. Don says... Here's what I need from listeners, because people have been saying, how can I help?
Oh.
How can I assist? Patrick has got apparently something large rammed into a small area of his body, and they're saying, how can I make it? How can we, the listeners, make this all better? Don says, here's what I, Don Taylor, need from the listeners. Every one of them needs to vote for us every day this week for that podcast award. And then she puts in all caps, sort of like Mom from Mom's Friendly Robot Company, I demand this. So there you
all
go.
Right.
So Don Taylor has demanded this. These are your orders. Here's what I need from listeners. Every one of them needs to vote for us every day this week for that podcast award. I demand this. The podcast award is the thing that I keep forgetting about. It's like in my temp, like my RAM or something. But then I look away for 5 seconds and I forget.
Right.
I guess we've been nominated for.
Is it the podcast awards, like podcastawards.com?
Sure, yes.
Because that is the thing, and because Movie BS is also nominated in the movie film category.
Yes, we are nominated in the news and politics category for reasons that...
I didn't notice that. That's awesome.
I guess it has less to do with the awards. It really is just about me that I like immediately had less respect for the awards when I found out that we were nominated.
It's sort of the same.
Don't say we're nominated for this award. I go, what kind of award can it possibly be?
Exactly.
And then I just sort of went back to typing whatever I was typing. But if you're not going to do it for me, and I can't imagine that you would, do it for Patrick. Do it for Patrick's catheter.
Mm-hmm.
Do it for Patrick's private area, won't you please?
Do it.
So vote for us. That'd be Legion of News. And I guess is it Podcast Award or awards.com?
Podcastawards.com.
It's all one word, podcastawards.com. You go to...
You can vote every day.
Really?
Yeah, and while they're at it...
Very reputable.
They may as well vote for Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder in the film category.
Can you vote multiple times in an hour from different computers?
They confirm with your email address. You have to have a real email address to confirm it, but you can vote once every 24 hours.
Could you vote over and over and over again with email addresses that were all different?
Yes.
They've really got everything buttoned up over there.
You know, yeah.
Wonder if there's some sort of podcast award that we could give them. you can find out more about that by going to podcastawards.com. That's, do it for Johnny and for Don Taylor.
Do it.
Here is Mr. Eric D. Snyder.
A new study from the United Health Foundation shows a little bit of improvement on the overall healthiness of the nation. The group's Dr. Reed Tuckson says Vermont is the healthiest state in the nation, followed by Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Connecticut, and Hawaii.
This is Health One.
Yes.
The states that are struggling the most with the most difficult challenges are located in the southeast of our country. Mississippi was 50th, Louisiana, Arkansas, Nevada, and then coming in at 46th, Oklahoma.
It's one of those things where you know, I guess you could be charitable and say, well, someone's got to be last.
Sure.
But I mean, let's be honest. We all knew it was going to be in the South. This doesn't surprise anybody.
We kind of did, yeah.
We kind of knew how this would shake out.
The news isn't all good.
It doesn't sound like it's good at all.
Well, there was some improvement, apparently. There was some improvement.
The good news is we don't live in the South. That's the good news.
Basically, yeah. The rate of obesity, we're still a bunch of fatties.
Okay. Let's see. Here we go.
We now observe that 27% of the American people are obese, and that is very frightening. We see diabetes continuing to become much more prevalent.
We're putting the dye in diabetes, apparently. So, yeah. All right. So there's only 27% of the. Does it say overweight or obese?
Obese.
Wow.
27%. Yeah.
Because there's pleasingly plump or whatever, and there's hefty and there's corpulent and there's, you know, corpulent's really when you. That's when you cross the line into the bad fat.
Yeah.
And then there's obese, and then there's morbidly obese.
Right.
And I believe morbidly obese. I think the root word there doesn't imply that it's lethal or. It's going to kill you. Isn't that what morbidly obese means? Morbid, there's morbid. Some morta.
Like mortality and mortem.
Yeah, like you're going to be, I mean, you're basically just going to be fatted to death.
You're waddling toward death is what happens.
Not so, you're passing by Gomorrah, going right towards death. Well done, sir.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. I'm Mr. Eric D. Snyder in for Don Taylor. By the way, if you'd like to hear more of his amusement-based stylings, you can do so Fridays, 11 a.m. right here at Cascadia.fm. That is Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder. You can also read him at film.com or at Cinematical. Legion of News brought to you by Castalia Language Center. Find out more about them by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That is Portland Spanish, all one word, Portland Spanish. .com. Ms. Clara Grebel, who is the owner and operator of PortlandSpanish.com, is a native Spanish speaker from Argentina, and she is now in Portland helping to teach Spanish language to people who... It's just like the most unfair trade when you're in high school, where you just give up hours and hours and hours of your life, and you're just ensconced in this tiny windowless classroom, often with like 50-year classmates. Nobody's learning anything, and you're just doing it so you can get like the final half credit. Because you failed woodshop, so you get to get like 2 extra language credits or something, just so you can graduate and not be stuck in your horrific small town or whatever.
You couldn't be less interested in actually learning Spanish.
Right. I mean, you're just that's it. I mean, you really are. You're like Danny Glover. You're just sitting there, just 2 days away from retirement, just trying to make it to the end of the day.
Uh-huh.
And possibly get a date for the spring formal. And so as a result, when you get out of the high school, like you know dick about Spanish. You have zero. You've retained like none of it. Not because you don't want to learn it, but just because let's be honest. You don't want to be there. If you're in high school, the teachers probably don't want to be there most of the time. So I mean, it's kind of a zero sum game at that point. Now that you're an adult, though, you have free agency. You have the ability to learn in a way that best suits you. And Castalia Language Center can do that. Whatever your schedule is, whatever the time of the day of the week works best for you, and whatever level of language acuity you may have now in Spanish, whether you're just getting in the ground floor, whether you spoke it once upon a time, but you need to. Burnish your skills, whether you're just sort of fine-tuning it. You can find out more by going to PortlandSpanish.com. Class size is no larger than 8 folks. So it's you and 7 of your compatriots, and they teach it conversationally, so you can use it in conversation. That is Castalia Language Center. Do we have a science on the march?
Oh, yeah.
News? Here's your science news for Wednesday right here at Legion of News. All right, here is Mr. Eric D. Snyder.
A Japanese space probe overshoots Venus and heads toward the sun. Sounds like an action movie. A Japanese probe to Venus failed to reach orbit Wednesday and was captured by the sun's gravitational pull in a setback to Japan's shoestring space program, which will have to wait another 6 years to try again.
Their shoestring space program.
Yeah.
Is that like it's more flavorful, but it's really, really thin? Or
The failure in the crucial orbital insertion stage of the probe was a big letdown for Japan, which has never succeeded in an interplanetary mission, but has marked some major successes in space on a relatively tight budget that is focused primarily on small-scale science projects, the AP says.
There's something ring false about this story, that the Japanese, well, let's be honest, seem like the smartest people in the galaxy.
They beat us at everything, science-wise.
I mean, they've got... I was going to say sex bot, because I always say sex bot, but I mean, they've got, like, everything bot, and yet they're not able to... I mean, you're basically just flying an airplane, but flying it a lot higher, and yet they're not able to do it. If the Japanese can't do it, how is it that we're able to do it?
Evidently, it is more complicated than you or I realize, and yeah, they've never succeeded on an interplanetary mission, and now they, again, have not. The probe is called Akatsuki, which means dawn.
Really?
It means dawn, yeah.
So the dawn has failed?
Dawn has failed.
Again? I mean, one of many failures.
Dawn was supposed to orbit Venus, and instead she's plunging into the sun. So
that is...
Nice going.
So does it actually say, I mean, is it literally like it was just supposed to go one way?
It was, no.
And
it
went the other way, like directly into oblivion or something?
Well,
or?
I mean, Venus is between here and the sun. So it headed toward Venus, and then instead of being pulled into the gravitational pull of Venus, it sort of missed that and overshot it and went toward the sun.
Okay, see, and so I didn't, because I'm an American, I don't know anything about learning.
From us, you got Venus.
So the sun's between us and Venus.
No, Venus is between us and the sun.
Venus is between us and the sun, but we overshot Venus.
And there's also Mercury, too.
Okay.
You got us, and then Venus, then Mercury, then the sun.
Space is hard.
I know.
Okay.
Well, you see why the Japanese are having such trouble.
Seriously. All right, no, fair enough. Okay.
So, yeah, they lost that space probe. It's going to the sun.
Maybe this is just like nature's way of balancing favors. You know what I mean? It's like where it's like, you know, it's like that guy in Shine who can play music but poops himself all the time. Maybe right. The Japanese, it's like they can do everything, but like this is their pooping.
They can make vending machines that sell girls' panties.
But they can't seem to. Science and space, you know, they never the twain shall meet this. Can't seem to make it work.
But can't you see that action movie?
I can.
If there were people on this probe who now are heading into the sun, and how do we get out of this?
Yeah, except I was going to make a Supernova reference. Damn it. Was it James Spader in Supernova?
That sounds right.
No, I failed. I don't deserve to make a Supernova reference now. I'll just go with a Gamera reference. Suddenly,
sure.
Gamera appears. He is friend of children everywhere and also people on space stations heading for the sun.
He's really neat and full of turtle meat.
Exactly.
Too bad, Dawn.
Akatsuki.
Now you know how to say Dawn in Japanese.
I'm going
to
yell, whenever I get cross with her or I'm angry, I'm just going to go, Akatsuki!
Akatsuki!
You sit down now!
Hey,
bring shame on whole family with news style.
You know what else? Flame retardants are found in butter. That's what it says. As part of an ongoing investigation into chemicals in our food supply, scientists found extremely high concentrations of a flame retardant compound in a supermarket sample of brand name butter.
Well, how are you supposed to melt it for your toast? Well, I guess maybe that's a lesser issue.
Right.
I'm going right to the how am I supposed to emulsify it?
This is a contamination issue.
Oh.
Because apparently there's not supposed to be flame retardants in butter.
Well, maybe not in your butter.
Well.
I like to broaden my mind. I don't like to let the man tell me what chemicals I can have in my spreads.
These chemicals are known as PBDEs, or polybrominated diphenyl ethers.
That sounds harmless.
Commonly used in furniture and electronics. They're known
Does this butter taste like a TV to you?
Known to disrupt... I had a piece of toast and the channel changed. They're known
well
to disrupt... Known to disrupt hormone function and have been associated with a range of health problems, including cancer as well as reproductive developmental and neurological problems. So you don't want to be eating them. As funny as it sounds...
It's only funny on the outside. Once it's inside you, there's no laughing.
It kills you. But it means if you catch on fire goes right out.
Excellent. So it's sort of it's a contextual thing.
So I guess if you're in a line of work that may lead to you being set on fire, eat a lot of butter.
If you're the Human Torch, no, you probably wouldn't want it then.
Well, it's a flame retardant.
That's what I'm saying. The Human Torch, he wouldn't want to have
retardant. He wouldn't. Yes, absolutely. But if you don't want to be on fire.
The thing with the Human Torch, is he on fire on the inside, too?
I don't know how that works. Because what about his clothes, too?
I'm going to write it down.
Look into that.
By the way, another message from Dawn, who is... I can see the rest of the afternoon unfolding this way, where it's just like a series of... You know, it's like, it's like that thing where it's like the, never mind, I was just going to make an observation about something, skip it. She just says, so she's relaying a conversation she's had with Patrick. Dawn says, hey honey, thousands of people right now are thinking about your penis. Patrick says, I can live with that. All right, let's see, here's another text, this is from some anonymous guy. Says, all lower caps... And a sort of scattershot approach to punctuation. Good Lord, shut up about the podcast awards. Already stopped listening to the other attention whores about this. Now pleased to say, I can stop listening to you.
Right.
All right. Well, you'll be missed, but in that way that is sort of insincere when I say
it. Right. He's not even hearing us right now talk about him.
That's right. All right. Well, if it makes the separation really... like a lot easier. I wasn't paying attention to whatever it was you typed earlier on in the day. So it's, sort of a wash.
I'm not going to vote for him at the Listener Awards.
Enjoy the rest of your life, sir. Here's Mr. Eric D. Snyder.
One more science story. The evidence for extraterrestrials is mounting daily, but not proven. I'm not sure how this is a news story.
Did you say mounting?
It is mounting daily.
Okay, and we're not mounting extraterrestrials. That's how it sounded in my head for some reason.
Every day we are accumulating more evidence for ETs, but no actual proof yet. The evidence is just getting stronger and stronger, says Carl Pilcher, director of NASA's Astrobiology Institute, which studies the origins, evolution, and possibilities of life in the universe. I think anybody looking at this evidence is going to say, there's got to be life out there.
No, well, okay. How...
You're asking, how is this news?
I know, I just went through a whole thing in my head. I went through a whole, like, A to Z right there, and then I ended with, which I was gonna, here's the thing. Don't answer this, anybody, because I don't care that much. What I was going to ask, this is just like, this is like a DVD, like an outtake. It's like a scene that was cut from the final. I was going to ask, how is it that on the one hand, evidence can be mounting and mounting and mounting, on the other hand, they say there's no proof. Seems like those statements both can't be true.
Seems like there must be a point where the evidence has mounted so high that it qualifies as proof.
I mean, it's not like they're just talking about like a stray carpet fiber or something. If evidence is mounting and mounting, it seems like at a certain point you go, well, yeah. So, all right, well, whatever.
Ask the Japanese.
Yeah. That's the Japanese, but they can't walk out of their apartment without catching on fire for some reason. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Mr. Eric D. Snyder filling in for Don Taylor today. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today we got your, we may or may not get to this. We got the Darwin Watch. Hick Watch coming up today. Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler will be here. We'll talk to our good friend Todd the Corpse Workhoven about his Ms. Pac-Man game, which he is attempting to unload. And Don Taylor will be calling us from the halls of the hospital where her husband is being poked and prodded in really the most invasive of ways. In the meantime, in between time, we have more news from Mr. Eric D. Snyder.
The Obama administration. I'm going to try that again.
Let me just. And now, Mr. Eric D. Snyder.
The Obama administration is defending its compromise with Republican lawmakers on a plan to extend Bush-era tax cuts. White House senior advisor David Axelrod explains what it all comes down to.
Is this taxes?
Yep.
Right. At a time when our economy...
Hey, can we just will, like, all the rest of us, like, maybe if we feel like, you know, like, maybe they're better suited elsewhere. Could the rest of us all just all sort of, bequeath our tax cuts to Willie Nelson? Just to like forestall any future issues.
I think you could mark it on your tax form. Like there's a box you can check.
Oh my God! What if the rest of us just volunteered to give our tax cut to Wesley Snipes?
We have a story on that too.
All right, hold on, let me just play.
At
this.
A time when our economy needs additional energy, when people are struggling, that this is enormously helpful, and the opposite would be true if we don't do it.
Aren't you sad you're not listening now, Mr. I'm tired of you talking about the podcast, Jackassery?
I can listen to Patrick's penis, but not about the podcast awards. All right. Axelrod responds to criticism.
I say the people who are going to get screwed, as
Scrutus?
Congressman Ackerman says, are the Latin. American
I was just
going to
ask. He's the emperor that runs this entire program. The emperor is Scrutius. He will be coming by to collect your taxes.
I say the people who are going to get screwed, as Congressman Ackerman says, are the American people if we don't act to prevent their taxes from going up on January 1st.
I don't understand. Who is it constantly putting all of these construction signs in downtown Mesopotamia and stopping us from getting to work on time? That would be Emperor Scrutus.
Mm-hmm. President Obama held a news conference Tuesday afternoon to discuss the deal on taxes and unemployment insurance that he has struck with Republican leaders. Obama says reaching a deal was the most important thing, even though it may not have been the best political move.
Political fight that carried over into next year might have been good politics, but it would be a bad deal for the economy, and it would be a bad deal for the American people.
Does it seem like he's getting...
My responsibility as president is to do what's right for the American people.
Stop that. Seriously, stop that, Obama. Bad Obama. Down. No, mustn't. Mummy will smack. Little Bridget Jones humor there for you. That was weird. It was like he was done, and then it's like he popped back in like Butters in the corner of the, you know, the It's Butters show or something.
Right.
That's me. I don't even know what I was going to say now. He just threw me. He quashed my mojo there. All right. Well, whatever.
Well, anyway. Yeah, that's what happened with that.
Does it seem like he's getting smaller? Like, as he talks.
In size?
Yeah. Like, you know, it's like is it the end of the Alibaba Bugs thing where Daffy Duck gets shrunk down? When he's doing the, you know, go, down, down, my. And at the end, the guy goes like, you know, Kazan, you know, or whatever, and shrinks him down, and Bugs just like puts him inside a clamshell with a single pearl.
Right.
And he's just, you know, and he just gets...
I'm familiar with the reference, yes.
Does it seem like when you hear Obama now, you just sort of, you know, like he's just kind of getting further away when he talks, and he's sort of like a thing that's way over there in the horizon that we kind of look at for a second and go, yeah, okay. And then we just go back to whatever we were doing.
Yeah, I guess a little bit, metaphorically anyway.
I think the nation, we are slowly, it's like when a guy breaks up with you. It's like, you know, because women break up with you, guys just stop calling. And so we're just kind of turning down the fader.
Yeah.
Just sort of, that's great, Obama. You just keep talking.
Until we're waiting for him to say something awesome again, and then we'll
exactly.
get back together.
So he just, yeah, like until he tells us that we're going to get, you know, like our sex bots in this nation.
A long
he
political talked to us just sort of a. That carried over into next year might have been good politics, but it would be a bad deal for the economy.
And we're just, okay, that's great. You just let us know when I'm going to have a job again. All right? No, that's wonderful. No, mm-hmm. swell. Thanks so much, Obama. All right, here's Mr. Eric D. Snyder.
The Baby Center, which is a thing, is out with its top 10 list of
the baby
names.
Center, which is a thing.
Baby Center. Well, I didn't know that was a thing.
Are you talking about the solar plexus?
No, it's one word, baby center, but center is capitalized. Baby center.
Ah, this isn't where you put it on the kebab rod.
No.
This is an actual place.
No, it's out with its top 10 list of baby names for 2010. Editor-in-chief Linda Murray says the top name for girls this year is Sophia, and the number one boy name is Aiden. While pop culture holds a strong influence, Murray says not all parents are naming their kids based on that.
Let's see. Where the hell did I put my, where the hell did I put those? Wait. Oh, for the love of sweet... all right, hold on a second. This is, you know, of all of the gin joints in all the world in which I did not load a soundbite, why did I pick those soundbites to not have ready for some reason?
Know.
Why, Eric Snyder? Why, I ask you?
I refuse to take the blame for that one.
Let's see. Well, while I am attempting to locate that and... there, let me get those loaded up. Let me just say that Legion of News brought to you today by ChristmasMountainTrees.com. It is ChristmasMountainTrees.com. They make this award-nominated program... possible. For you, you can find out more about them by going to ChristmasMountainTrees.com, and they have a Facebook page as well, which is Facebook.com/ChristmasMountain. Troy and Jennifer, who are the couple who operate that farm, have been there. Well, the family has had it for, you know, 3 decades, now going on 4 decades.
It's 3 generations, isn't it?
Three generations. Well done. Thank you. 3 generations, 6 decades. And you can see from the... I'm not going to say the children weren't enjoying themselves. I'm sure it's an enjoyable thing. Sort of in a bell curve kind of way that your parents have the Christmas tree farm. When you're very young, it's probably great. Then when you're older, it's probably horrifying just because everything your parents do is horrifying.
And because your friends from school come to the farm and see you there.
And it's like, and they probably find like a huge tree that you then got to like drag out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. I'm not saying that you should do that, but I'm saying if I were the schoolmate of one of those, you know, one of the kids, it's like you probably find just the largest tree, you know, like something that's like 75 feet high or something. By the way, they did have a tree there and it's already spoken for. And it's like some company. It's like the kind that goes into, like one of those trees that like can't go to houses. I got to go to a bank or something. There was a tree that was like 18 feet high or something. I mean,
wow.
It's like, and it's just like a Christmas tree. I mean,
yeah.
It's not like, you know, it's not like some, like a redwood or something. It's just amazing. They're going to be open until December 19th. And it is a family farm where you go up and you actually can take as much time as you need, hours and hours and hours if you want it. You can see, you know, dozens, hundreds, thousands of trees if you want. And so you find exactly the tree that is right for your home, that's right for your business, you know, the tree that is going to look the best for you and for your family and for wherever it is it's going to go. And it's you pick it out and then, you know, you actually then just sit down. You can sit around a little fire. They've got some you know, sort of warming station, little cabin things. You have yourself a cup of coffee or perhaps some hot chocolate. By the time you get done with that, you go back down the hill. The tree has already been, they've taken the excess needles off, and then they've baled it, which is where they put it through this amazing funnel thing, of which I've got video, by the way, that I still have to put up, where you can just see the tree going like into the thing, and it comes out on the other side, and it's just compressed down to like 1/10 its width with a single piece of twine that you're then just going to go, and you just cut it, and then it goes, and it's just
nice.
In place like perfectly. Don't even get me started on the Christmas tree stands they have there, which is like, sounds like a small thing. Do you put up a tree, sir?
I don't, but when I was a kid, my family did.
Yeah, there's that thing where you got to, like, you know, the old school trees where it's like
uh-huh.
you got to get in, you got the screws on either side.
Right.
And it's like your dad's going, like, it's left, no, left, the other left. And it's like you're trying to, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. And you're turning the little pins in the bottom.
Terrible,
trying to,
yeah.
It's horrible. So they have, like, a whole new way of doing it, which is where they got a machine that they put the tree on, and it actually just put, it drills a cylindrical, you know, sort of a cylindrical hole sort of right up in the base. And there's a stand that actually just has then sort of a threaded, like a piece of rebar, basically, like a huge threaded sort of screw in the base. And you just got to go, and you stick the tree on there.
Wow.
And it wedges itself in,
yeah.
And the tree, and it's just like there, and it's done.
That's fantastic.
Done. So anyway, it's just, it really is just fantastic.
Let's say the Japanese do that.
That's right. And
mm-hmm.
So this is really where the strides in our technology are being being made. Anyways, you can find out more by going to ChristmasMountainTrees.com. Here is Mr. Eric D. Snyder.
I
are we doing
like
entertainment
one.
News?
We should, probably
Wait,
should, actually.
Hold on, look over there at some entertainment news. fantastic. Here's your entertainment news for Wednesday.
Do you know who was shot and killed 30 years ago today?
Now, this is one of those things where every year we have to add somebody to the list, right? Because it was the Pantera guy, like, 5 years ago. And right. Then it was Lennon, 1980, right?
Yes, John Lennon. 30 years ago today in Central Park in New York, this woman, who is at a makeshift memorial dubbed Strawberry Fields near the park, remembers the day Lennon was killed.
Let's see, this is Lennon 1.
Yes. Yes.
Do you, before I play this, do you remember where you were?
I was probably in, I would have been in...
Were you alive at that time?
I was. 1980 in December, I would have been in first grade.
So were you old enough to process it?
No. My mom was a huge Beatles fan. I'm sure it was traumatic for her, but I don't remember.
You don't remember it happening? Yeah. I remember vaguely my sister being upset about it, but I don't remember. And I remember seeing, it must have been later on the day, when they were having like a vigil or something on, right. Doing one of those, like, the news was showing the candlelight gathering at the... It wasn't called Strawberry Fields while he was still alive, was it? It after his death?
They call the memorial that now, but it was in Central Park.
So this woman remembers where she was.
John Lennon has been fatally wounded, and I was young. I didn't understand what fatally wounded meant. I thought it meant he got his arm blown off because he's a musician. That would be terrible.
Well, if you go to the Dakota, actually, a friend of mine, my friend Chris, was actually in New York, and you can stand out front of the Dakota, which is where he lived,
right.
And which is where Chapman shot him. And he said, it's one of those things where... It's subtle, but you can see it, that the security guys they hire at the Dakota, they are big and they are imposing in that quiet, understated way that lets you know that they mean business and they're probably carrying a lot of weapons.
Nice.
And I don't know if it's the building or if it's Yoko or if it's just whatever, or if they just get so many tourists and crazies that come by there. But he said that he went by, and I've done it, and it's probably morbid, but I mean, what are you going to do? It's an important thing.
Yeah.
And I went by, and he sort of... And as Spinal Tap would say, you just get too much effing perspective. It's like you stand there and you go like, "Well, life sucks." And yeah. then you go get a blintz, and your day is good. But it really is just, it's the weirdest. It's the weirdest thing. And they're these guys, and they're like the Secret Service guys, like the talking into their wrist guys. And you get the sense that if anybody causes any trouble there of any kind, like they can put you down like a calf at a rodeo, like instantly.
Probably only takes one international superstar being shot in front of the building for the building management to. Take it seriously. Rolling Stone has an interview with John Lennon that was recorded 3 days before his death. They had lost part of it. Where am I? I lost my place here. The magazine is going to reprint what it described as Lennon's last print interview in full. They published parts of the interview after Lennon died, but the complete encounter was lost until recently. They found the tapes and they're going to reprint the whole thing, his last interview, and inevitably it's a few days before he was going to die, and there's a few tragic irony bits where he said, for example, he sloughed off criticism of his hiatus for music making, saying, quote, "What they want is dead heroes like Sid Vicious and James Dean. I'm not interested in being a dead effing hero."
And, okay. Well. It's funny. Actually, I am reading right now the book John Lennon, The Life, which came out, I guess, maybe 2-3 years ago. And this is not The Lives of John Lennon, the Goldman book.
Right.
It's escaping me.
I don't remember.
But it came out 2 years ago, which is really an exceptional book. It really is fantastic because there's so much about, the thing with Lennon, it's like how it's our friend Peter Carlin actually, put out the McCartney book, because he noted that there was so much said about McCartney, obviously, in the Beatles era. But with guys like that, like especially Lennon, there's that whole period we just tend to skip over. Where he's in the Beatles, and then he kind of vanished, and he had the so-called Lost Weekend, and then he came back, and then there was the tragic death.
Right.
But there's a whole... Even leaving aside like the Plastic Ono Band stuff, it's like there's a whole section of his life that I don't really know that much about.
Right.
Where I just don't really know what he was doing in a lot of the years leading up to his death. And they tell the story about not too long before he died, Lennon performed it. It was like some charity concert or something in New York City. And it was, I don't know, maybe 78, 79. It might have even been in 80. But he performed, it was like 1 day, 2 shows. There was a show at like 5 p.m. and a show at like 9. And... They said that they actually, up until a few minutes before the 9 o'clock show, it hadn't sold out. There were still tickets, and somebody had written a piece about this. It might have been like Jan Winner or a guy like that. And he said, it's hard to believe that there was a time in the not too recent past, or not too distant past, where you could actually just walk up to a ticket window, give a guy $9, he would give you a ticket, and you could walk in, and John Lennon would come on stage and sing songs for you.
That's incredible.
And that the show wasn't even sold out. And he said it really is just, it's just one of those things that it's like you just, when you're in the painting, you don't see the painting, as Steven Tyler would say. And so it's, it's weird to think, Because you think of all those guys, you know the Salieris and the Mozarts and the whatever. You don't really ever stop to consider the fact that there are people like that, the equivalent of that in any number of fields and disciplines, that are alive at the same time you are. And it's a thing you just don't appreciate sometimes.
Yeah,
so,
it's true.
Well, there you go. Well, I hate to end on a big down,
so
but, you
reflective.
Know. It's what we do. As Eddie Izzard would say, I like to leave people with kind of a feeling. Thank you for listening to Legion of News. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program will be broadcasting to 147 countries spanning the globe at rickemerson.com. Coming up today, Hick Watch, Darwin Watch, a little bit more with Mr. Eric D. Snyder, who can also be heard every Friday at 11 a.m. Movie BS with Bear and Snyder here at Cascadia.fm. Also coming up next hour, Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler from Fun Employment Radio and our good friend Mr. Todd the Corpse Workoven. Thank you for joining us. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Till then, have a satisfying and fantastic Wednesday, won't you please?